Welcome to the Happily Hormonal podcast. Now, if you're a little iffy on whether or not the word hormonal is a good one, then you are in the right place. If you would love to have lasting energy, balanced hormones, and better periods, and you find yourself spending all of your precious time after the kids go to bed researching what to eat, what supplements to take, how to exercise, and you feel overwhelmed by all the info out there, then I've got you. Emily Chaudry is a registered nurse and functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, plus mama of three little ones, and I know that hormone balance doesn't have to be hard. I'll help you balance your hormones without perfection with simple steps that actually work for busy mamas so you can feel good inside and out and be present, joyful, and confident in the beautiful life you're already living. If you're in for happy hormones, taking messy action, and seeing results without perfection, then put your hair in that mom bun, grab your toddler the seventh snack of the day, and grab yourself a bone broth hot chocolate so we can do this. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. Today I have Alex King here with me, and I'm really excited to chat with her because she is a women's health nutritionist and works with women on a lot of the same things that I do. And she also is a podcast host. She's the host of the Holistic Women's Health Podcast, which is how we got connected. And we're going to talk today about endometriosis, which is something that I know so many women are dealing with and we're seeing more and more of, in my opinion. So I'm really excited to dive into that. But first, Alex, I would love for you to just introduce yourself. Tell us your story of how you got into women's health and why you love what you do.
Yeah. Now that you're saying everything out loud, I'm like, we have so much in common, which is amazing and incredible. But I got started in this space. We'll start typically at 11 is when I started getting interested in food and nutrition and asking my mom, what are the benefits of this? Because she would always say, eat your blueberries. There's a lot of antioxidants. And then I started getting curious and asking questions. What are antioxidants? Why are they good for me? And started getting really into that and really curious. And then at the age of 13, I ended up having to get emergency surgery for a ruptured cyst that was twisting and torting my left ovary. So I had many painful, heavy, scary periods between 11 and 13 and just absolutely terrified of what is happening. And so they rushed me into surgery, removed my left ovary. And then the doctor said, listen, you're going to be on birth control for pretty much the rest of your life. Come off until when you want to get pregnant. And then easy peasy, you'll get pregnant, no problem. Go back on until menopause. And then at that point, we can reevaluate to see if you still need to be on it just to manage menopausal symptoms. And I was like, okay, you know what's best for me. So I'll stay on birth control. And then I had to switch up my birth control many a times because it was impacting my mood and everything. I didn't feel like myself. My mom noticed a change right away. My typical bubbly sunshine personality was absolutely gone. I was this angry teenager and she said, okay, we have to switch you. So it took about three different birth controls until I was on one for over a decade and then decided to come off. And that ended me back in the hospital with heavy, painful periods. And then went back on the pill and really did research. And at this point, I was done studying dietetics and I was studying holistic nutrition. And I thought, this time I'm going to do it the right way. And so did all the prep, took about a year to totally change my nutrition. Even though I was eating pretty healthy, I was getting more protein, focusing on filtered water, hydration, lifestyle, and supplements, mindset, stress, all of that, and then came off the second time and had no issue whatsoever. And that was back in 2018. And I've been off ever since. And then just continued studying nutrition, getting into this field. And that brings us to where we are today.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. There were several parts that I was just like, man, I can only imagine as a 13-year-old how incredibly scary that would have been. Because I think as a 13-year-old, there's not much you can handle, but like severe pain, surgery related to your period, all of that has to feel so vulnerable. And then having that essentially, 10 years of your life or more, where you had to be on birth control because your symptoms off of birth control were so severe. And in all of that 10 years, it doesn't sound like there was any guidance toward there might be a reason you're having these cysts. There might be a reason your periods are so bad. Maybe we should look at that even while you're still on birth control or while we manage the symptoms.
Yeah, looking back, I see a lot of correlations of my mom said she had painful periods growing up, and she said she was pretty sure her mom also had painful periods. So she just said, that's what we have. We have painful periods. And I wish that we could dig deeper. There is a little bit of a genetic condition with endometriosis, fibroids, adenomyosis, different conditions that can cause these heavy, painful periods. And also when I was growing up, it wasn't really talked about. It was embarrassing to talk about heavy, painful periods. So everything was just swept under the rug. We don't talk about this. These are private conversations. In school, they barely covered the basics, just this is how you use pad and tampon, don't get pregnant, see you later. And so I didn't really talk about it. And it was just an embarrassing subject. And it's funny now, this is what I do when I talk about this day in, day out, of cervical fluid and tracking your cycle, heavy, painful periods, all this type of stuff. And now I'm trying to teach people this isn't an embarrassing topic and we should be talking about this, because the whole reason not talking about it has never served us ever. And we're so under-researched and all that. So we should be talking about this, getting the research and the help that we deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really great point to make, that it was something that was definitely affecting your life to a large extent, affecting your mood, affecting who you fundamentally were as a person and like how you showed up, and causing you a lot of pain. And yet it was like embarrassing to talk about. And so if people noticed that you had changed, or noticed that you had 3 days a month that you had to go like hide out, there wouldn't be any conversation about it, which is, I think, just really sad to think about as a teenager, that you didn't have like an open door to share what's going on and look for more solutions. And obviously that's not me saying your mom did anything wrong or anything like that. It's, I'm sure she was doing absolutely the best she could to help you. And I'm just so thankful that I think the conversation has opened up a lot more. And I hear moms all the time talking now about how they just want it not to be like a one-time conversation. You're going to get your period and here's a tampon, but let's talk about it all the time. This is something normal. This is something that happens to me. Someday it'll happen to you. When it's happening to you, how is it going? Are you hurting? That's not normal. Let's do something about it. And I think that creates so much empowerment for women to be able to not just suffer through your teenage years, especially because I think once you get into like your late 20s, your 30s, maybe you're a little bit more able to look for answers or realize that maybe there's another option. But I think those early years is something that I'm very passionate about changing for younger girls.
Yeah, I'm sure it can make a world of difference. And like you said, having that conversation, not just one time, but asking again, because some kids can be shy and things like that. So I think I needed to have multiple conversations and not just with my mom. My mom was awesome. And she's the one who actually encouraged me to get off of birth control. And she was worried about my fertility and things like that. But having even open conversations with my friends at sleepovers, with more of an in-depth conversation in school and things like that, to say, listen, this is not embarrassing. 50% of the world bleeds. This is not something that we asked for. This is something that should be talked about. And this menstrual blood is not dirty. And just having that conversation and really changing that narrative and, yeah, shifting that thought process.
Yeah, I totally agree. So let's shift and let's talk about endometriosis. And so since this is something that I know you specialize in a little bit more, I would love for you to just start by explaining what endometriosis is and what some of the symptoms are for women who maybe don't exactly know what it is, or maybe even are wondering, could this be something going on for me? Just let's do a little overview and then we'll dive in deeper.
I love it. So endometriosis is where the tissue that normally grows inside the lining of your uterus is growing outside, and it can grow anywhere in the body, even all the way up to the brain. There's been a couple of cases of endo being all the way up into the brain, all the way down your body. Typically, though, it does stay in the abdominal cavity, but it can even grow around the heart, causing heart issues. And some women report shortness of breath and things like that. But anyways, so that's what the condition is. Yes. So we have endometriosis, also adenomyosis, which one just grows inside into the tissue. That's adeno. If it's growing outside, that's endo. And symptoms, the number one symptom would be intense, painful periods, also heavy periods, a lot of bleeding, a lot of clotting, any low back pain, hip pain. If you get cramps during your period and it's going all the way down your thighs, up your back, just pain everywhere to the point where even painkillers are not working, where you're doubled over, you're canceling work and school and plans, and you're just, you can't do anything, basically. Painful sex is a big one as well. Pain with peeing or just the urgency to pee if there's a lot of tissue growing, nausea, vomiting, low libido, potentially subfertility. So just struggles getting pregnant as well, depending how much endo tissue there is. So it's really not just, it's a full body disease. It's not just painful cramps. It can really impact your mental health as well. If you're canceling plans with friends, you can't leave the house. And it's not just during your period as well that you're getting these pains. It could be also during ovulation. If you experience pain in the middle of your cycle, that could be endometriosis. So it's, yeah, it's just a painful disease all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do we diagnose that to know that it's endometriosis versus like more of a typical case of estrogen dominance without the tissue growth?
Hey friends, sorry to interrupt, but I have something new and free for you. So it's going to be worth it. I just created a private pod course that is going to teach you all about how to actually balance your blood sugar for happier hormones and more stable moods and energy. And I'm giving away the first two episodes completely free. All you have to do is sign up and grab those, and you will have complete access right away. Your link is in the show notes, and I will see you in there.
Yes, the way to get that 100% sure this is endometriosis is, unfortunately, to do surgery. That's why a lot of people go undiagnosed. It takes around 12 to 15 years to get that endodiagnosis. So a lot of people are just going undiagnosed because either they can't find someone who is willing to do exploratory surgery, because it's a guess, they're going based on your symptoms. And if they think your symptoms are severe enough, then they say, okay, let's do exploratory surgery. If we find anything, we can do excision surgery and to remove that endotissue. But the way is to do that exploratory surgery. Otherwise, in the meantime, we're just guessing, going off of feeling on the abdomen in your gynecological appointment, intervaginal ultrasounds, and hopefully in the future we get a little bit more advanced and we can maybe do an MRI or some sort of blood test that would help diagnose endometriosis. But for right now, it's exploratory surgery in order to get diagnosed.
Yeah. And I can imagine that you would really have to be at a pretty severe place with your symptoms to be like, okay, I'll have surgery just to see, because that surgery can be partial treatment as well. With the excision, they're able to sometimes remove, it definitely depends on the person, but a significant amount of the endometriosis or some of it, and it can reduce symptoms for sure, but it can also come back. And so it's not like a clear method of treatment necessarily.
Exactly. That's the thing, is we also want to do diet, lifestyle, mindset, stress reduction, all sorts of things, supplement, herbs, so that it doesn't come back. Because that's the thing, a lot of my clients will go get the surgery, and then about a year later, they're in pain again, they're feeling all the symptoms. And then it's, okay, what are my options now? Do I get another surgery? Do I just get a full hysterectomy? What are my options? Especially if someone's trying to get pregnant, what can I do? So the part of it, if it's extremely debilitating, could be to get that exploratory surgery. Otherwise, with a lot of my clients, we go heavily based on symptoms. We start doing some treatments. If it's working, then we know, okay, this is the right treatment for you. Otherwise, we'll explore, try different things, get some ultrasounds, get some blood work, do some other testing around there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my next question was going to be, what are some misconceptions around endometriosis? I would say that one of them is surgery is the only option, right? and even maybe like misguided treatment attempts. So I would love to hear, we've already talked about what the typical treatment plan looks at, but what would be some suggestions if you would have someone with endometriosis who is, I really don't want to have surgery. I definitely don't want to have a hysterectomy, which is not the typical endo surgery, but it can get to that point where they say you have to have a hysterectomy. Yeah, I'd love to hear what some of the alternatives are.
The best one to start off with, surgery not the only option. That's a good point that you make. I would say also throwing birth control at the problem. It can help symptom management, but again, it's not going to help what's actually happening. So the tissues can still be growing. Even if you're on birth control, you just won't feel the symptoms as much. So by the time you come off and you want to, let's say, get pregnant, or you just want to come off birth control, then you can start to feel the symptoms a lot worse. You might have trouble getting pregnant. What else? Misconceptions. Yeah, that painkillers or medications are the only options as well. There's tons of stuff we can do. Lifestyle, changing the way you eat is a really big one. Herbs, supplements, all sorts of. There's different massage techniques. There's pelvic floor therapy that we can do. There's all sorts of things that we can work on in the meantime as well.
Okay, so let's talk about food for endometriosis, because I think that's something that feels usually the most like tangible. Okay, in my life, I could focus on food. I would love to hear your thoughts on what you would focus on for endometriosis and maybe where that would be different from where you would focus if someone just simply has bad periods that are not related to endometriosis, or if it would be really similar.
It would be really similar. We would just do a little bit more towards the anti-inflammatory route compared to just any other hormone condition. But if it's painful periods, then a lot of that can be inflammatory as well through prostaglandins causing a lot of that inflammation. So definitely focus on some anti-inflammatory. It's going to take a little bit of digging to see which foods are right for you. For instance, cauliflower bothers me, but it might not bother you at all. So maybe carrots bother you and they don't bother me. So the foods that are bothering you are going to cause some of that inflammation. So a little bit of digging, but main culprits would be things like alcohol, gluten, dairy, caffeine. Those tend to be highly inflammatory. So play around with those, removing them. I typically recommend anything for about 3 months, see if it's working for you. If not, then slowly you can reintroduce one at a time, see if it's making a big difference for you. If not, other things would be to balance your blood sugar levels and focus on insulin. So making sure you're getting, I like to call it FPFC, healthy fat, protein, fiber, and color at every meal, just to balance your blood sugar levels. Make sure you are getting a source of protein, those healthy fats, lots of colors. Berries are great as well. Citrus is something that is anti-inflammatory. And there was a study that looked at citrus that showed 22% lower endometriosis risk if you are including lots of citrus. So that would be oranges, grapefruits, lemons, limes, adding those into your daily routine. And then also gluten. There can be a 75% reduction in symptoms just by going gluten-free for endometriosis. So something to explore as well. Is that typically what you recommend for nutrition and endo?
Very similar, but I love hearing other perspectives, because even like the citrus, bringing that in, I was just thinking about, okay, I would love to read that research article, but what are some of the reasons for that? I know citrus has a lot of antioxidants. It's very high in vitamin C, and that's helpful for not only working against inflammation, but also for progesterone production. And my understanding is that there is a really big link between estrogen dominance and even iron dysregulation with estrogen and then that endometrial tissue. Because when we biopsy that tissue, there's often a lot of estrogen and iron in that tissue. And so I could definitely correlate that if there's estrogen dominance, oftentimes there's also not enough progesterone, or that just the estrogen is being produced in too high of quantities. And so, yeah, that would circle me back to a lot of the same things that I would do with estrogen dominance, along with some targeted responses as well. And so I love that you're saying we have to essentially work a little bit harder with anti-inflammation and maybe be slightly more restrictive with foods for a while to make sure that we're not just causing more of a problem and continuing the same pattern and that we're actually making progress. So if you're working with someone with endometriosis and you're like giving a window of time where you would hope to start seeing improvement even without surgery, what would you typically be looking for you, for your clients?
Typically, a lot of my clients will start to notice a difference in pain with, depending when we start working together, with their next menstrual cycle. So about a month, but that's small potatoes. So typically the 3 month mark is when we notice a little bit bigger of a change. And then I would say 6 months to a year is more like it. And then it's an ongoing thing. So it also depends on my client. My clients who notice a difference in a month are doing all the work so diligently. They're willing to do whatever it takes. Some of my clients who are just a little bit more laissez-faire, then it's okay doing a little bit more minimal work, then they don't notice as big of a difference. So with endometriosis, the more consistent you are with your herbs, your supplements, your lifestyle, your stress, then the more of a difference you're going to notice. And it totally depends what treatments you're doing too. So my client noticed a big difference within the month, and then a huge difference within 3 to 6 months. And then she was scheduled for surgery already. So she was like, I'm just going to get the surgery. And then she still continued to do everything because we knew that if she didn't continue on also the combined treatment of the natural as well as the surgical, that it could come back and she could just be in pain all over again. So anywhere from 1 month to 6 months to a year, depending what treatments you're doing and how well you're doing everything, and then not just doing it when you're in pain. So not just taking your ginger, your turmeric, all that when you're in pain on your period or around ovulation, really doing it all month long is what's going to make the difference by the time you get that bleed to prevent that pain during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear all of that. I would definitely, my answer to that would have been like right around that 3 to 6 month mark too. And I agree with you. It's not that you couldn't see something before 3 months, but usually it takes about 3 months to start seeing bigger changes and that consistency over time. It's like by the time it's 6 months, it's almost like unrecognizable. Oh, wow. Like I can't remember how bad it used to be, even if it's not perfect yet. And I agree with you that it's so easy, especially I'm totally guilty of this myself, to just want to do things for symptom relief when I have symptoms and not stay consistent the rest of the month, because it's really easy to question, is this actually working? And then when you're in pain, you're like, oh yeah, okay, I need to do something about this, whatever that is for all of us. So I think that's a really good point. And that's something that I believe as well, especially with nourishment, like we have to be doing that consistently over time. And then that's where we start to see the big long-term changes in the body and in hormones. This is not on my script at all or on my list, but I just wanted to ask you, what are some of your go-tos for treating period pain, like in the moment, that you've seen work the best, with the understanding that it needs to be the baselines, it needs to be the consistency. But I always like to ask other women's health practitioners if you have anything great up your sleeve that could help take the edge off in the moment.
I love this. And I'll probably come at it with a, this is what I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I'm in pain. So this is such a great question because sometimes we are in pain. It's okay. What can I do? I always have this adorable little bag. It's this old Clinique bag that has these cute little flowers on it. That doesn't matter. But I have all my stuff in there for emergency. If I'm nauseous when I'm in an endo flare, if I have really bad endo bellies, so that really bad bloating. Yeah, if I'm in crazy pain. So for me, heating pad right away. Heating pad is awesome. Heat therapy is amazing. That also includes me wearing socks. So cold feet, cold womb. So I'm putting socks on my feet to make sure my womb is warm. Heating pad. There's this cream that I love called Kalia, and I might be pronouncing that totally wrong. Kalia, but it's this Arnica cream, and I get the one with the massage roller balls on the end. So I'll get my partner to rub it on my low back. I'll rub it all down my thighs and all over my pelvis. And that cream I love because it has a little bit of that peppermint, but it also has homeopathic remedies in there like Arnica to also get to the pain. So that I'm doing. And then I love also the little Boiron homeopathic pellets. So I'll do some of those that are great for painful periods and any type of pain. So Arnica as well. And then for me, I love any shower or bath or any the water. I swear I was a fish in a past life because water for me just calms me, right? Maybe a mermaid, but it just calms me right down. So if I'm okay to do a bath, then I'll do Epsom salt bath and just chill in the hot bath. Sometimes it's a shower because the really hot water from the shower head just on my lower back feels really good. And then all the warm foods give me the warm tea. I'm not really doing coffee at this point because for me, I find that makes it worse. So no coffee, no alcohol or cold foods while I'm bleeding and in pain. And yeah,
I want to just warm
foods.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about that. That's actually something I was going to ask you. I was thinking about that with warm foods. I personally don't have period cramps, but I noticed with my last baby that after I had him, I had gotten a recommendation to do warm foods because the cramps after baby can get like worse and worse with more babies, apparently. And I was definitely like, oh my gosh, this is a lot. Like when the first couple of days when he would start to nurse, and I stopped all cold foods for 24 hours, the cramps completely went away. So my husband made me an adrenal cocktail the next day. It was cold. I was like, whatever, I'm drinking this, came back. So do you feel like you have been able to tell like pretty clearly that the warm foods help?
Yeah, I can just feel it in my energy and my body. And it's so interesting that you knew even just with the one drink that, okay, because this drink is cold. Yeah, so sometimes we want the cold and the icy drinks, but during our period, it's just based on traditional Chinese medicine, not the time for any cold foods. It can cause the restriction, blood's not flowing properly. And it's, yeah, kind of back to the cold feet, cold womb as well. So it's like cold body, cold womb. So yeah, just the warm soups, stews, all the nourishing foods help a lot.
I love that. And I actually love even that you're talking about like your little bag that you have things in and it has flowers. And I can tell that even just in that moment, like that brings you joy, right? That there's like something that you consider beautiful and you like it. And I think that we could really do with a lot more of that because as women, I think we have that feminine urge for things to be beautiful and to like want to make things nice. And I think it's stronger for some of us than others. It's something that I'm definitely working on in my own home because it's not something that I've spent a lot of time on before. But anyway, I just wanted to say, I think that there's a lot of power to even like creating something pleasurable and beautiful around the time when you are hurting. And so even whether that's like making sure before your period that your room is like really comfortable and maybe you have flowers or you have some candles in there that you like, or you have a diffuser with oils or something that just makes you like smile and you're like, okay, this brings me some joy. Even if you're in the bathtub because you're having period pain, like doing it with a candle that you like or something like that. I think that there's a lot of power to that. So I just love that even you were talking about your little bag and you're like, this little bag brings me joy while I'm hurting. So I really love that. Those are great tips.
On that topic too, because you bring up a great point that I didn't even consider talking about, but the whole femininity aspect as well. So anytime we're denying that feminine aspect of ourselves, this does have a huge correlation with endo and painful period because we're denying that feminine part of ourselves and we're always in our masculine that can throw off our hormones and even how that's affecting us mentally. So it's something that I never considered with my cute little flower bag, but now I'm like, I love this even more because during menstruation is a time to tap into your feminine side, your intuition, connect with anyone else in your area who's bleeding, whether that's friends or family or anything like that, or even just being by yourself and journaling and doing all the feminine things actually really does help your cycle.
Yeah, that's so, I love that actually. And I think that's something that I would love to dive into. I don't think there's going to be like research studies on this at this point, but even experiencing myself and like experiencing with other women, what does it look like to lean more into our feminine, really honestly, throughout the month? And how does that show up in our period symptoms? And I actually, this is totally just me having thoughts right now. This isn't backed up by any research that I have, but just I wonder how much of our hormone symptoms truly just come from repressing who we are and feeling, I was going to say hatred. I think that feels like a strong word, but also some of us could definitely feel that, like hatred toward our menstrual cycle or toward what we've been told a woman is and not being able to trust our bodies. maybe not knowing our bodies very well, and that bracing that we could constantly be doing to say, to be like trying to be someone that we're not, or trying to be in our masculine 24/7 and not be connected with our cycles, connected with our flow. I know that some of us listening might be like, okay, like how far are you going to go with this? Because I'm personally not someone who's like using my menstrual blood for remedies or things like that. I'm not going to say it's wrong, but that's not me. And I think that we have maybe heard some crazy stories. So we're like, oh, I'm not going to get all woo-woo with it. But truly, this is the way our bodies were made. And I have found so much power and so much just like connection with who I am by just realizing, hey, a couple of days before my period, maybe I don't have the capacity that I normally do. And instead of seeing that as this is negative, this is something wrong with me, I have to power through, I find so much more joy and like compassion with myself when I say, this is the time in my month that maybe I do slow down a little bit, and slowing down allows me to connect more deeply with my children, or it allows me to get more rest. And that's something that I know I need in my life. And so even just being able to, I think, break through some of the racing that we have against our cycles and leaning into our feminine in that way, I think that can make a really big difference. Because even in childbirth, when you are fearful and you are bracing, it makes it so much harder. It makes it so much more painful. But when you're able to be open, and when you're able to relax your jaw and relax your pelvic floor, it's an incredibly different experience when you're working with your body instead of against it. So I can tell you have lots of thoughts on that, but I love even just those simple things.
There may not be a lot of studies, if any. There might be some studies with the birth. I do remember having a guest on my podcast once who was talking about, if you're afraid and you're going into birth, you're going to have a worse or a more traumatic birth than if you go into birth excited and happy and ready. And so she talks about, be careful who you're surrounding yourself with during pregnancy. You want to have more of those positive experiences. And that's a sidetrack. But even if we don't have scientific studies, we have history and we have intuition and what works for people. So way back in the day, just through history, we had something called the red tent, and where a lot of women bleeding would go to the red tent, they would all bleed together. And just saw all the benefits of that. They wouldn't do any of the hunting and gathering. It was more, we're just going to take the time off just to bleed, relax, be with other people, and really feed off of that energy and that intuition. And I'm sure a lot of people, if they tap into into their own intuition, they can tell, okay, when I'm bleeding, I do want to stay home. And I do just want to watch a show on Netflix, journal, read a book, whatever it is. Maybe they are craving more warm, cozy meals, soups, stews, pho, things like that. I'm always like, give me all the ramen during my period. And yeah, so it's incredibly powerful knowledge to just listen to your body. We talk about it all the time when it comes to gut health or anything like that, but we can't forget about our cycles as well. Just leaning into that a little bit more and seeing how you're feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I love all of that. I think actually I was thinking about the red tent earlier when you were talking, and I think that's just so countercultural. Like, I can't imagine being able to just be like, cool, checking out for 5 days or whatever. But also, that could have been awesome. And I think that we can look, that might be something that I would like to research more, actually, like how that actually worked. But I think that we can look at it from like a oppressive society type of worldview and be like, oh, they were sending the women away to bleed because they were dirty or whatever. But we can also look at it from a way of the women like needed that time to connect. And I absolutely believe that you can be more in tune with your intuition in your period phase. And truly, like, the cervix is open, the womb is open. There is power to that because that's where life comes from. And so I think that it really is all in the perspective. But I loved what you said about even connecting with other women who are bleeding at the same time, and not it just being like a mope fest of, oh, my belly hurts, everything's terrible. But like, what if we like had a deep conversation and drank tea together and spent some time journaling? Like, how nourishing would that be? I'm going to find a period buddy.
That just sounds like something I want to do. Just saying, have a bunch of snacks, warm drinks, and just hang out when you're sweats and chill, and yeah, have someone to have deep conversations with. And even going back to that mindset piece as well, something that I changed a lot when I was in the deep throes of my painful periods, I realized I need to stop talking so bad about my body and my uterus. And earlier, what made me think of this is you use the word hate. And I remember when I was deep in pains, I always said, I hate my body. Someone else take my body. I would always tell my partner, I wish you could just take my uterus and you could have it. You could have all the pains. And I would always say, I wish I could just cut it out, like physically just take a knife and just cut out my uterus and just get rid of it. And I have totally stopped saying that. I don't say that anymore because I know for myself, it's made a difference. Just everything that we say, Louise Hay has done a lot of research on this, just how your thoughts and your mind can impact your body. There is also a Japanese study, the rice study, that looked at how water impacts rice as well, depending on the words that you're using, which is fascinating. And so there's a little bit of research, but more research would be awesome. And yes, I've stopped saying any negativity like that, and I have found it does make a difference.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about before, where sometimes we're given our only option with endometriosis is to have a hysterectomy. And I could see how that could be something that you would want if you are struggling with your periods for a long time and they're just so painful. It's, you know what, like I'll give up any chance of having children or I'll give up future children because this is just so terrible. Like it would feel very reasonable in that moment. But I think that it's so empowering to know that maybe that's not the only option, that maybe you can have both, right? You can keep your uterus and you don't have to be in pain every single month. And I just love that message because I know it to be true. And even though it's not always the first thing that is handed to us when there's an endometriosis question or diagnosis, there is so much more to it. And I think that even some of the layers we've talked about of like our feminine and our mindset, there's so much power to that that we just give away when we don't believe in it, essentially.
Absolutely. You're so right.
So I have loved this conversation. This has been so fun for me. So thank you so much for being here. We will share all of your website and your links and everything in the show notes. But do you have anything else that you wanted to share before we wrap up?
Just that this has been such a great conversation, just the back and forth and sharing all of these ideas. And it's just typically when I talk about this topic on podcasts, it's all, okay, what can we do? What supplements, what herbs? But we went totally in a little bit more of guiding into the femininity aspect, which was fun to talk about. So it's just been a great conversation and I appreciate you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Any information shared on this podcast is solely for educational purposes, is not to be taken as medical advice or to be used as a diagnosis or a treatment plan for any medical condition. I'm sharing my educated opinions and experience, but nothing shared here can be taken on a one-size-fits-all basis. We always recommend that you do your own research, talk to your own doctors, and take full informed responsibility for any health and medical choices that you make. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with me today. If you had as much fun with this episode as I did, make sure to share it with one or three of your besties and leave a rating and review so that more and more women can find this podcast and have happy hormones. And when you're ready to have pain-free periods, no more PMS, and energy and capacity to live the life you really want to live, then it's time to join us in Nourish Your Hormones. I can't wait to see you in there and help you have balanced hormones all month long. See you next time.